So today I'm going to talk about local language and local global compatibility. I guess I want to start by fixing L a prime number, which is different from another prime P, and fixing an isomorphism of QL bar with C. All right, so first, I'd like to just recall what happens for n equals 1. So, what we get from class field theory. So, for F any number field, local class field theory tells us that if V is a place of F, maybe not a finite place, well, we can consider the V group of F at V as a dense subgroup inside the decomposition group, the Galois group of FV. And local class field theory gives us an isomorphism between FV cross and the abelianization of the V group. So this is kind of the the simplest reciprocity statement, one of them. So maybe we want to choose this isomorphism such that a uniformizer goes to a geometric Frobenius. So via such an isomorphism, we can compare characters of the two groups. So we can compare characters of FV cross and characters of the V group. So via this map, okay. And there's also, a corresponding statement at infinity. So for V dividing infinity, this time we have a local reciprocity map from FV cross modulo, the connected component of the identity, into the Galois group of FV. And we don't need to abelianize because it's already abelian. And via these isomorphisms, we can compare characters. And characters, we can think of them as representations of GL1. Today we're mostly going to focus on GLN, but I also want to mention the global story. So global class field theory can be thought of as a bijection between Grossmann characters, which are continuous characters of the Adels, which are trivial on F cross, say into C. So a relation between these and continuous L-adic characters, which are just characters of the Galois group, so of F bar over F, QL bar. Now, one thing is that before we can say that we have a bijection, we want to put some nice properties here. So I'm going to call this algebraic, where this is a condition at infinity. It's basically, you guys saw yesterday, in Yanis's talk, the infinitesimal character was defined. So in the case of GL1, the infinitesimal character is going to be determined by one complex number for every infinite place of f, and the condition is that that complex number be an integer. I'm just going to say we want an integral infinitesimal character. Okay, and this corresponds to a condition here, which is actually at L. So this is going to be called Derome at L. It's a technical condition that arises from Piatek-Hodge theory. So maybe you guys will hear something about it tomorrow. Okay, so when we have these conditions, we get a bijection. I want what? Oh. Sorry. Yes, definitely. Okay, and you can compare these using a global Artin map. Which is just a map that you build up from the local ones, actually. So the global Artin map is a product of the Artin map of FV over places V of F. And it will go from AF cross modulo F cross and then F infinity cross connected component of the identity into the abelianized Galois group of F. So that will give us an isomorphism here. And using this map, you can compare the objects on either side. Okay, and somehow a key point is that, you know, the global bijection that you get is compatible with the local bijection. And this is true in this case just by construction because we build up, you know, the global map from the local maps. So, if the bijection above sends chi, a Grossman character, to RL of chi, then RL of chi restricted to the Weyl group at some place V, say some finite place V, has to be isomorphic to what we'd get just by restricting to chi V. So this is, I guess, the condition that the two types of correspondences are compatible. So local global compatibility is by construction. Maybe an example would be if we look at, say, L to the n power roots of unity, there will be an action of the Galois group of Q, and the Frobenius at a prime P basically acts by raising to the pth power. So somehow if we identify this with, QL bar cross, Frobenius acts via, well, geometric Frobenius acts via 1 on P. Geometric. Okay, so maybe the different uniformization, but you can see that, different normalization, sorry. Frobenius acts as a uniformizer. Okay. So this is a story that we want to generalize. So you guys have seen what happens. So this is a story for GL1. For GL2, you guys have seen a lot about modular forms, which you can think about as cuspidal automorphic representations, say, of GL2, of the Adels. And associating to these Galois representations, two-dimensional Galois representations. So this is somehow the generalization, in some sense, of this picture in terms of comparing characters to GL2, where you compare representations. Okay, so I want to give you the statements for, what happens in general for GLN, and then try to work out some more or less concrete examples. So for GLN, the main conjecture due to Langlands and Fontaine-Mazur is as follows. So, on one hand, we're going to take cuspidal automorphic representations of GLN of the adels of F, again, for some number field F, which are algebraic, again, a condition at infinity, which is that the infinitesimal character has to be integral. So we're going to look at these up to isomorphism, and the conjecture is that these correspond to continuous irreducible representations, let's say R, of the absolute Galois group of F into GLN QL bar. Okay, and there are some conditions. So for one, we want these to be unramified at almost all primes. And again, kind of the counterpart of the condition at infinity is going to be a condition at L, which is de Rham at L. Same type of condition. Okay, and we want to consider these also up to isomorphism. So the conjecture is that you have such a bijection. I'm going to talk about what is known in terms of going from this direction to this. So starting with pi and associating to it a representation, RL of pi. So this is known in general, I guess for general n, when F is a CM field, when pi is conjugate self-dual. So this is needed basically so that pi comes from a representation of a unitary group of the type that we talked about. So pi descends to an automorphic representation of a unitary group. Yesterday we saw that a unitary group over a quadratic extension looks like GLN in, you know, some places can look like GLN. Okay, so, and then we also need an extra condition, which is called regular algebraic. So this is also a condition on pi infinity. So in addition to having an integral infinitesimal character, so this infinitesimal character being given by n integers, you want those integers to be distinct. Okay, so this is needed so that pi can be seen in the cohomology of a unitary Shimura variety of the type that we talked about yesterday. Okay, and I should mention that somehow, you know, you can associate this representation, but that irreducibility of RL of pi is only known in special cases. But maybe we'll be able to see an example of irreducibility today. Okay, so this is what the global correspondence looks like. There's also a local Langlands correspondence. I guess you guys saw it for GL2. I just want to tell you, just state what happens in general. So for that, we're going to need to take K to be a p-adic field And we're going to define a Vedalin representation of the V group of K over C to be a triple consisting of a vector space, a representation of the V group of K, and then an extra operator. So, you know, for local class field theory, we were comparing representations of the V group. In order to, I guess, compare things in general, we need something more. We need an extra operator. So V is going to be an n-dimensional. Yes. Oh. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the condition for GL2, this condition means the weight of the modular form is greater than or equal to 2. Yeah, thank you. Okay. So V is going to be an n-dimensional vector space over C. R is going to be a representation of the V group on V. And N is going to be a nilpotent operator on V. So I guess the point of N is that in an L-adic Galois representation, the L part of the tame inertia acts unipotently and N is sort of a logarithm which encodes this action. When you pass, say, if you want to use these Vedalin representations over C instead of, you know, the L-adic Galois representation. Okay. So the theorem is, so the local Langlands correspondence is actually a theorem. It's due to Harris-Taylor and NER, and it goes as follows. So we have a bijection between the following types of objects. On one hand, we have irreducible, smooth representations of GLN of K up to isomorphism. And on the other hand, we have, I should say, Frobenius semisimple. So this means that representations in which the R, so VRN, in which the R is semisimple and n-dimensional Vedalin representations of the V group over C. Okay, and this also over C. So we'll call this map rec for reciprocity. So you can basically, you know, define this over QL bar if you like. So before, I guess, moving on, now that we have kind of the statement of the global correspondence and the statement of the local correspondence, let's see what local global compatibility should say. Well, what it should say is that, so you can take the global Galois representation. You can restrict it to the decomposition group at some place y, let's say y is a place above p, and then somehow that's going to be an L-adic Galois representation, you want to associate to it a Vedeline representation over QL bar. So somehow these Vedeline representations are equivalent to the L-adic Galois representations. And whatever R you have there, you want to Frobenius semi-simplify. And then, so this is, you know, the global correspondence restricted to a finite place, and you want that to be the same as, so I'm looking at the local correspondence of the component of pi at the place y, and there's a need for a twist here, which depends on n, which you don't see when n is 1. Okay, so, and then you, you know, get a representation over C, you take it to a representation over QL bar. Okay, so this is what local global compatibility should say. Okay, and so we want to talk about how to, I guess, see either the local Langlands correspondence or the local global compatibility in some sense. And for that, I'd like to say that the local Langlands correspondence has some properties which are very desirable. Let me move here. Well, for one thing, the local Langlands correspondence is supposed to generalize local class field theory. So, instead of a rec, instead of the reciprocity map, let me consider RL, which is iota L inverse rec of the representation tensor determinant 1 minus n over 2. So let's say RL of pi. So for one thing, for n equals 1, you want to get local class field theory. So just the composition with the local Artin map. And another property that maybe is not quite as easy to see, but if a representation is induced from, say, if pi is parabolically induced from some representations of smaller groups, then we'd want to be able to say where local Langlands will send pi in terms of the local Langlands images of pi 1 through pi k. And actually, the statement, if we're working with RL, is that RL of pi should be equal to just the direct sum of the representations RL of pi k, at least if I semi-simplify. So this is, without keeping track of the monodromy operator. So, for, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, yes, I guess I mean pi is an irreducible constituent of such an induction. Sorry, yes. So somehow, you know, if pi occurs in such an induction, you want, you know, in some sense, you can think of it as being supported on the same set as these are supported on. And so you want the local Langlands image to respect that. Okay. So for GL, let's take the example of GL3. So since you guys have seen, I guess, a lot of examples with GL2, next best step is n equals 3, so I'll consider that. Then we have GL3, and let's take pi to be a discrete series subquotient of an induction. So let's take B to be the Borel subgroup, which is upper triangular matrices. So an induction from the Borel subgroup to G, a representation of the Levy. So let's take chi composed with a determinant, chi det squared. Okay, where chi is some unramified character. So we'd like to know where local Langlands will take such a thing. Let's say this is going to be pi 1. If our local Langlands correspondence would satisfy those properties, we would want RL of pi 1 semi-simplified to be the same as RL of chi direct sum RL of chi determinant direct sum RL of chi det squared. So, you know, this is what we'd like. This is what, I guess, you know, local Langlands correspondence should satisfy this. And so we want to see if we can, you know, find this somehow, you know, show that this happens in the cohomology of some Shimura variety. So this is what it should be semi-simplified. And there's an expectation also for what n should be. Zero, one, zero, 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 one, zero, zero. Wait, the way I've written it, maybe, I don't know, hope I don't get my twists wrong. So this nilpotent operator should somehow, you know, take this into this one, and this here, and this one into zero. Now, the reason why we'd expect such a thing really has to do with algebraic geometry. It's basically a consequence of something called the weight monodromy conjecture. So if you can find this representation in the cohomology of some variety, there is a conjecture of Deligne that maybe you heard about or talked about at the colloquium yesterday, which says something about what the monodromy operator should look like. But in our case, I guess a better reason why you know, we'd want this is, for instance, we'd be able to, you know, if we take pi, some automorphic representation with pi at the place y, given by our pi 1. So, you know, if we can find an automorphic representation with pi 1 as its component at the place y, then, you know, we'd expect the representation associated to pi y to be irreducible. So if n has this form, then the representation is irreducible, simply because its, you know, restriction to the decomposition group at y has to be irreducible. Okay, so these are, I guess, our expectations for, you know, pi 1. Okay, so let's take another example. So let's say chi 1 and chi 2 now are unramified characters of Fy, or K equal Fy cross. Let's look at SP 2 of chi 1, which is the Steinberg representation. So the unique discrete series subquotient of the induction from Borel to GL2, chi 1 det. So you guys, I think, saw this in Florian's talk. Okay, so let's take this representation, and let's take pi 2 to be the parabolic induction. So the parabolic will be something like this. We'll have a 2x2 Levy and a 1x1 Levy to GL3 of SP chi 1 tensor chi 2. And let's say that chi 1 and chi 2 are somehow very different, so chi 1 is not the same thing as chi 2 det, and chi 2 is not chi 1 det squared. In order to avoid kind of getting the same thing that we got there. So in this case, this representation will be irreducible. And the expectation for r of pi 2 is that we will get, let me write it. Well, using that formula, the expectation for RL of pi 2 is that it should be chi 1 det, so just the image of this under local class field theory, plus RL of chi 1 plus RL of chi 2. And we want the monodromy operator this time to look like 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Somehow that would prove that somehow the local Langlands image of the Steinberg representation is irreducible. Okay, so this is what we'd want. All right, and finally, you know, we'd want, say, if pi 3 is supercuspidal, which means that, you can't find it as a subquotient of any parabolically induced representation, for a proper parabolic subgroup, then we want to be able to say at least something about RL of pi 3. So we want to at least figure out, you know, how do we find it? Where do we look for it? So since it's a supercuspidal, it may not have an easy description in terms of, something we can compute using local class field theory, but, you know, at least we want to have some idea of it. And hopefully we'll be able to see that it's irreducible as long as, yeah.
Well,
I guess the. Let's see. Categories of. L-adic representations. Yeah. Right. Sorry. Yeah, if the Galois, yeah. Yeah, I guess something along those lines. Sorry, I'll get back to you. Okay, so.
I guess these local GAO representations coming from the CNN, I mean, these look very upper triangular. I mean, I thought that's not the same as irreducible, but maybe if you know the GAO representations globally, semi simple, then that's less than decomposable.
Okay. Now we want to talk about how to actually, find these correspondences. So we're going to use the Shimura varieties that we talked about yesterday. So we're going to use Shimura varieties, which are of Harris-Taylor type. And for n equals 3, so they will kind of correspond to a unitary similitude group, G of U12 cross U03, some number of copies. So, the kinds of Shimura varieties that we talked about yesterday. And this will be our unitary group. Okay. So let me say that the representations pi1 and pi2 have Iwahori level at the place W, Y. They have Iwahori level at Y. So that's what they look like locally at Y. So we'd want to work with U inside G of A infinity. This is the level. We want to talk about U W or UY. We want this to consist of matrices, M in GL2 of OFY, such that these matrices are congruent to upper triangular matrices. Mod Y. So, not quite trivial level, so we're not just looking at GL2 of OFY, but kind of the next best thing, which is Iwahori level. Okay, then we're going to work with Shimura varieties of this level. So XU for such a U and we want to consider their cohomology. So this is going to be a direct limit over U having this Iwahori level at the place W, but getting smaller and smaller at other places, of the cohomology of XU tensored up to F bar with coefficients, say, in QL bar. But instead of QL bar, we may use some other elliptic sheaf, which encodes the weight. So somehow we want to consider a cohomology of these kinds of Shimura varieties. And the point is that these Shimura varieties will have two kinds of actions. On one hand, they will have an action of G of the finite adels. So in the moduli interpretation, you have some kind of choice of isomorphism of vector spaces. G is, defined as the group of automorphisms of such a vector space. So, this will act on the inverse, kind of the tower of XUs as you vary U, and you also have an action of the Galois group. So let's look in characteristic zero. So over F for now. Okay. So away from the place Y. Okay. So we'll have something like this. This will break up. As a direct sum over irreducible admissible representations of G of A infinity away from Y. Of these, so we're just kind of decomposing with respect with the two actions that we have. So here I'm going to put a Galois representation, L attic, depending on pi infinity y. And the claim is that this representation here, we're going to see the global representation associated to RL of pi, where pi is an automorphic representation of GLN of AF. So if pi has is pi 1 or pi 2, if we restrict one of these representations, we're going to find at least, the local, we're going to find something which we should check matches up with the local Langlands. Okay? And I should say I didn't put here, HI, for instance. I could put HI, or I could simply consider these as alternating sums where I look at, say, H of X is just the alternating sum minus 1 to the I HI of X, somehow in the Grothendieck group of representations. Okay, so I guess the bottom line is we want to compute pi infinity part. So the part where somehow these representations give you pi infinity or pi infinity away from y of the cohomology of the Shimura variety. Okay, so now we get back to understanding how to compute this cohomology. We're going to use the integral model we have. So use the integral model over K, where K is equal to Fy. All right. So we're going to, again, have the assumptions that F is a CM field, which is obtained from a totally real field and an imaginary quadratic field, and that P splits in E, and so on. W is going to be Y is going to be our preferred place above P, and so on. So all these assumptions that we talked about yesterday. And somehow they're not essential. So these assumptions can be removed, but we're going to work under these assumptions. All right. So if we have all of this, then we know what the special fiber of this looks like. For n, just as an aside, for n equals 2, Iwahori level, you guys have seen it parameterizes, say, degree residue field of Y isogenies between A, 1, and A, 2, some abelian varieties. Maybe you saw this for the modular curve where you had a degree P isogeny E1 to E2. So this is the same as looking at chains of isogenies. Between, and instead of the variety itself, I'm going to use the p-divisible group. So let's say GI A PI infinity, AI P infinity. So G1 to G2, and then you get another isogeny somehow for free just by the dual. G2 will go to G1 quotiented out by the kernel of multiplication by P. So, you know, you can look at it as isogenies of a certain degree or chains of two isogenies, all of degree ky. Multiplication by P will have degree ky squared. So, you know, for n equals 2, you have something like this. The natural generalization for n equals 3 is to consider chains of 3 isogenies. Before I go there, I should say, So I should say that here, you know, the special fiber, so characteristic P, looks like something like this. Okay. So for n equals 3, Iwahori level we're going to look at degree k of y chains of degree k of y isogenies. Maybe G1 going to G2, G3, and back to G1 mod the kernel of multiplication by pi, or pi is a uniformizer of k. Okay, so these will be kind of reduced last time to one-dimensional p-divisible groups with OK action. Okay, so, and this is what Iwahori level is. Chains of these isogenies. So now, what you can do is first look at, there will be points which are super singular. Those are points where A pi has no actual points over FP bar. So somehow the scheme is, so it has scheme, I guess scheme theoretic points, but it has no actual geometric points. And this will correspond to a p-divisible group which is connected. So there's no et al. Part. The et al. Part comes from looking at the points. There's, the et al. Part is trivial, and everything is connected. The connected height in this case is going to be equal to 3. So that just means the rank is basically the cardinality of the residue field to the third, the rank here of the connected part. So for something like this, you can use parameters for what these isogenies, let's say F1, F2, F3, maps induced from F1, F2, F3 on the Lie algebras. So that will be, if you use such parameters, let's say X1, X2, X3, there's an obvious relation, which is on the Lie algebra, the product of these will be pi. So locally, your moduli space looks like okay, adjoin these parameters and mod it out by the only relation that their product is the uniformizer. Here, you could do the same thing with two parameters. And this is how you get this local structure of a normal crossing divisor. So again, for n equals 3, at a super singular point, the XU looks like OK, adjoined X1, X2, X3, mod X1, X2, X3, minus a uniformizer. So, you know, if you were to draw it, it would be like the intersection of three coordinate planes. And so you can even kind of take this further to get a stratification of Y, say the special fiber of XU, Y to be the union of Y1, Y2, Y3. Okay, and Y1 is the first isogeny. Well, what happens, I guess, here if X1 is 0, that means the first isogeny induces a 0 map on the Lie algebra. This is how you define a global component induces 0 map on the Lie algebra. Okay, and similarly in Y2, the second isogeny in this chain will induce the 0 map on the Lie algebra. In Y3, the third will do that. And the supersingular points are going to be the points where all three isogenies induce the 0 map on the Lie algebra. All three isogenies will have to be the Frobenius isogeny, which will look like 0 in characteristic. Yeah, which will induce the 0 map on the Lie algebra. So supersingular locus is Y1 intersect Y2 intersect Y3. Okay, so to cut things, I guess, a little bit short, I should say that you can also consider a locus where it's not quite supersingular, but it's, I guess, the closest thing. So these intersections just of two components, the p-divisible group will have a tall height at most 1, and the connected part will be at least 2. So you can look at these and kind of take disjoint unions of such a thing. And you can just look at the disjoint union of the components, which have all a tall height will be at least, at most two, the connected will be at most one. Okay. So in this case, where you just have Iwahori level, there's actually a spectral sequence that will compute the cohomology of the generic fiber in terms of, well, not the special fiber, which is highly singular and doesn't look very nice, but the cohomologies of these strata. So I should say this is smooth and zero-dimensional. This is smooth one-dimensional. This is smooth and two-dimensional. So there's going to be, in this case, there's going to be a spectral sequence computing it. Which converges to H I plus J of the generic fiber. And I'm just going to tell you the part that gives us H2 of X. So let me call this supersingular locus Z1. This, let me call it maybe Z0. Z1 and Z2. Then there's the kind of the part that converges to H2 on the E1 page. What you get is H0, Z0, twisted by minus 2. H1, Z1, twisted by minus 1. H0, Z0, plus H2, Z0. Z1, Z2, sorry. And here I should put twisted by minus 1, H0, Z1, sorry, H1, Z1, and H0, Z2, Z0. Oh, God. Sorry. So this is what the kind of how to compute the generic fiber cohomology in terms of the cohomologies of these smooth strata. And the monodromy operator N will go something like this. So shift the weight, or, you know, skip by 2, it'll look something like this. And this is what the E1 page is. Now, just to cut things short, you can compute these cohomologies using the same kind of method that you guys saw on Monday, which is, you know, kind of counting points, understanding, you know, that the points parameterize isogeny classes of abelian varieties, using Honda-Tate theory maybe to make sense of that in terms of group theoretic data, and then going back to automorphic representations via the trace formula. So there is a way for computing these, especially somehow we've reduced something highly singular to smooth strata. Okay, so if we can compute this, well, I'll just tell you what you get if you just take pi 2 part of the cohomology, or pi 1. So pi 1 was chi det squared induction. So pi 1 you got from this. Then the pi 1 part of the spectral sequence will look like basically it will only show up, so you can see, well, if you do the computation, pi 2 will only show up in here in H0 of Z0. So it'll show up in there, and here, and in here, and somewhere, nowhere else. And there you'll see RL of chi twisted by minus 2, 0 RL of chi twisted by minus 1, 0 RL of chi. And I should say that everything else in the spectral sequence will also turn out to be zero. So, you know, knowing that we're working with something semi-simple, if you just want to get the RL of pi 1, well, it'll just be the direct sum, RL of chi twisted by minus 2, direct sum RL of chi, direct sum RL of chi twisted minus 1. And if you want to know what n does, well, n exactly does this, and you don't need to worry that, you know, at the second page something else might happen, because this already degenerates at the first page. So this is, you know, really kind of, you know, the E infinity page as well. So from this you get n looks like 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. All right. A similar computation, I guess maybe if I can just take a minute, I can tell you what happens for pi 2. Which we got from, yeah. This is somehow part of the data. So part of the data is that in this spectral sequence, n induces these isomorphisms. So you see that you have H0 and an H0 here. This will just be a tape twist. So on this, at this level, n is just tape twist on the E1 page. That's just a kind of a geometric argument. So it just has to do, you know, whenever you have something semi-stable, something like a normal crossings divisor, intersection of coordinate planes, you'll get such a spectral sequence and n will induce the right isomorphisms. The weight monodromy conjecture is that even at the E infinity page, it still induces these isomorphisms. Okay, so pi 2 is, so we have a, I guess, a chi 1 det, and a chi 2. So chi 1 will only show up in H1 of Z1. So we'll have RL of chi 1 minus 1, RL of chi 1 minus, with nothing. And then chi 2 will only show up in H2 of Z2, RL of chi 2. And the other terms will all be zero. So here n again induces an isomorphism, but, you know, this time it kind of skips this, which occurs in the middle. All right. Yeah, this is all I had to say for now. Thank you.